Why do people know who the Kardashians are?
One good casualty that comes out of this, perhaps, is the death of the celebrity.
If people resist influence, then you don't really influence them.
Honesty, an honest endorsement, and authenticity in marketing is this weirdly unattainable goal. Philosophers. So, David, what are we talking about today?
Well, you brought up an interesting concept that is relevant to the times, which is the commodification of influence.
Yes. Have we talked about influencers yet? I think we've mentioned them maybe in our episode on content creators.
Probably. And I think we have also made mention of like celebrities and other like big names taking advantage of their influence for personal gain, things like that. There's been passing mention, I think, but never a full topic.
Yeah. And I think we could probably talk a little bit about influence in general, but I think the main thing that we wanted to talk about is the commodification of influence. And so I think let's dissect a bit. What does it mean for something to be commodified?
Well, that means to make something into a commodity, of course.
Well, what is a commodity?
A commodity, according to the American Heritage Dictionary, is something useful that can be turned to commercial or other advantage.
Now, is that what most people mean when they say something is commodified, though?
I think they mean number two, which is a product or service that is indistinguishable from ones manufactured or provided by competing companies that therefore sells primarily on the basis of price rather than quality or style.
Yeah, and that's what I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think influence as a phenomena has existed as long as social beings have existed. Influence is really just do what I want you to do and people will just do it. For you might argue that it can move the energy level required for someone to do something that you want them to do. It can lower that. So I guess the example is that if I just tell you, hey, you should buy this thing, and if you just do it, that's great. But I'm still influencing you if I say you should buy this thing and I'll give you a 20% discount. I still influenced you to buy it, but I may not have gotten you to buy it if I hadn't gotten the discount. So the discount plus my influence equaled, you know, I have pushed your thought processes over a threshold that results in an outcome that I wanted, you know. Influence is very, very important to two very particular groups of people, I think, in society: politicians and advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
You could say probably by extension, from advertisers and politicians, businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But because most businesses outsource their influencing to advertising agencies, I think, you know, it's kind of concentrated there. But influence has always been like a really important thing for human beings. Like, for example, when you think of like the feudal era, where you have kings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the king does have an army. You know, that's a huge boon to getting what you want. But a lot of the times, they don't need to deploy the army to do things. They can just say what's going to happen and it'll just kind of happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we probably discussed this a bit when we were talking about authority versus power. Authority is also kind of just influence in the practical sense.
Yes.
It's not. Authority is the right to demand or to say what should happen, but...
Yeah, but what is a right, really?
Yeah, if the person already does not believe that you have the right to do that, then you do not have authority. Like, authority right. is a two-way street type deal.
Exactly. Yes, and I think the place where we went in authority versus power was that authority is a kind of power because it relies on people already kind of agreeing that you have that power. Right. It's kind of a self-fulfilling thing.
Mm-hmm. It's been predetermined that you will get your way on this. I might as well just do it, you know, mm-hmm. or you can tell me to do this.
And so, yes, influence is also a kind of power that you can. Well, influence is just the power to get people to think how you want to a certain degree.
Right. That's pretty much it. And arguably, it's more powerful than force in a way. Because
people will resist force naturally.
Right. And people can resist influence too, but it's a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that I think most people, I don't know that most people.
Well,
I know
if people resist influence, then you don't really influence them.
Exactly.
So if you do have influence, then you do have that power.
Right. But because of concepts like paranoia, it's a little bit harder, I think, to actively defend against influence without, like, for example, if I want to defend against people using force against me, I can prepare for that. And while you can make the argument that being prepared to defend yourself is a defense, it's not active defense. You know, it's just assembling the means, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if I have a bulletproof shield and I own it, it's not defending me until a bullet hits that shield instead of me, right?
Or at least until it is between you and someone else's gun. Yeah,
exactly. Influence is one of those things that it's always happening. And so you kind of always have to be defending against it. And mm-hmm. it's purely psychological. And this is a weird thing too, because I think once someone's aware, like if you ever had that moment with somebody when either they're about to buy something or they bought something and they are kind of like coming to the realization as to why they're making that purchase, and they realize that they've been bamboozled by advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have a moment like that in your life where you realize that you just totally got by the marketing?
None that come readily to mind. I'm sure it's happened before.
I have. Video games.
Mm.
So you remember the days when video game pre-rendered cutscenes, or better yet, the marketing for video games looked so much better than the actual game.
Well, yeah.
Because it's a lot easier, like, I mean, crying out loud, we've been doing CGI videos and movies for a long time, but having the ability to have a video game with a comparable fidelity that's being generated on the fly, that's recent.
Right.
And so I remember watching Command & Conquer video ads for the original Command & Conquer and being like, whoa, this is so cool. Look at that tank. That tank is awesome. Wow. Look at that helicopter. That helicopter is awesome. I can't wait to play this game. I get it for my Nintendo 64, the first game I got from the Nintendo 64. And I'm like, what?
And that's why you were bamboozled, because you'd never seen a Nintendo 64 game before.
I did not have
expectations. Had you seen any other Nintendo 64 game, you would have known that it didn't look like that.
Yep. And I was like, what? What is this? What is this absolute dog water? What are these polygons? And then I realized, oh yeah, those three rectangles are the mammoth tank that I saw. And then I'm looking at the video game manual that has these really nice high reg images, and I'm like,
I've been had.
I've been bamboozled. So that was very early on in my life. That made me very cynical about advertising. But I've seen it in other things too. Like, I mean, I think I've seen it a lot with people who, now this is not as common, I guess, because we all kind of have an expectation of what fast food looks like when you actually buy it versus how it looks in the commercial.
Yes, but if you're fool enough to look at the menu and think that what you're going to get is going to look like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, man. I remember, I guess one quick other anecdote. I remember having, I think it was my cousin or something. It was a young relative. I don't know if they were my cousin or like a nephew or something. I don't remember. And they were watching TV and were like jaw dropped about some Sonic drive-in drink that looked amazing. It was colorful and vibrant. And then we go to Sonic and we get it. And first of all, it comes in the commercial. It's in these nice clear glasses.
Right, but they give you the styrofoam cup.
Yeah,
which so they is the get, standard because that's what they put everything in. Yeah.
Yeah, so they get that and they're like, ugh. And so they're like a little upset. And I was like, it's okay. When we get home, we'll put it in the thing. They put it in the thing for them. And I think it was like some Nerds candy in there that was supposed to be like this really blue drink with like these very vibrant red and yellows, evenly dispersed Nerds. And then, of course, by the time we get home, the semi-frozen drink has melted. It's liquid now.
Right. All the Nerds have sank to the bottom.
And we pour it in the thing. And the Nerds are also all white now because their candy coatings have like melted. And it's just, it looks horrible. It looks like a bunch of teeth at the bottom of this murky water, and they were just like really upset.
That's so, like, funny.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's influence. The influence was not the lie. The influence was anything that it took to get me to buy the Command and Conquer video game, anything that it took to get my nephew to buy the Sonic drink or to beg his mom to buy the Sonic drink, you know. But influence is other things too. The reason why politicians are so concerned with it is because they need you to do something for them.
Right.
Vote.
Write their name on a piece of paper, proverbially or literally.
Yeah. I need you to go check this box next to my name, not that other person's name, or sign this petition so that I can get on the ballot. Yeah, they need you to do something, and they cannot pay you to do it, allegedly.
Right. Yeah, legally, they cannot.
Is that true as a tangent? Can you not just offer bread and circuses?
I'm pretty sure.
Why not?
Because I'm pretty sure people did do that, and then they wrote laws about it.
Is that any different than offering to write policies that I know give that them
In some state, I forget which one, maybe it was Georgia or something, that it was people got arrested for providing water to people who were waiting in line at the polls because there's a law against doing that on the off chance that you're a member of a political party who's trying to buy votes with water.
Wow.
So I guess it's probably on a state by state basis, but yes, there are laws against doing that.
Interesting. So yeah, they have to use influence, and they can do that by changing your beliefs, you know, or affecting your beliefs. And maybe they help encourage a belief that they are a good candidate and they're just like you, or they are just like your dad, or if you hate your dad, they're nothing like your dad, right. You know, like, or the other guy is just like your dad, or he's a bad person, you know, like whatever issues they're catering to in the market. So I think that some people, okay, influence, is it good or bad? Or is it just a thing?
I mean, it's a thing. It's power.
Yeah.
Is power good or bad? It just is.
Yeah. Now, does it depend on who's wielding it or what's being influenced? Or can you separate the two?
I mean, you can separate who's... Yeah, I feel like those are separable.
Okay.
But, I mean, yeah, obviously that's just going to come down to subjective opinion as to who do you want to have power?
Yeah.
And, well... And the reason you care about who has power is because what do you think they're going to use it for?
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I guess the other thing too, who's responsible for the influence?
Who's responsible for the influence?
Right. So example, one day I come up to you and say, hey, I'm going to buy a Toyota pickup truck, this one in particular.
Yeah.
Now, you have no idea why. You can ask me why I'm buying the Toyota pickup truck. Okay.
Okay. But you might tell me a story about how you did your research and it's just the greatest thing ever.
Or, yeah, I could do that. Or I could just be straight up and like, bro, but look at this commercial. That looks awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So who is it Toyota's fault that I'm buying the pickup truck? Or is it my fault that I bought the pickup truck? Like if I buy a lemon, or not a lemon, but if I buy a pickup truck that is not suitable to my needs.
Mm-hmm.
Whose fault is that?
It depends.
Because I also...
It depends. Yeah. There's some level of... There needs to be some personal responsibility because you literally did the thing. You went and bought the truck.
Yeah, I'm responsible for the purchase. Right.
Right. You're responsible for actually making that decision. But there's also something to be said about deceptive marketing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Well, and other types of influence as well. So like there could be deceptive marketing where, you know, they kind of like fudge the numbers or whatever, and you're led to believe that these are real numbers, but they've misrepresented them in some way to convince you that this is a good deal or whatever. Or, you know, they're exaggerating the capabilities of the product, like it can haul, you know, so many tons or whatever, or it'll run for this many thousands of miles without issues or whatever they're doing to sell you the thing, or they just show you a cool picture of it climbing some rocks.
That's
or something.
Literally what I was imagining. This is like,
they show you a cool picture of it climbing some rocks or something like that, but it was actually a modified version of the vehicle, and the stock one that you're going to buy isn't actually able to lift itself like that to climb rocks, right? Or whatever. Like, yep. They're being deceptive in that way. Or they could take advantage of human psychology in some way. Arguably the picture of climbing rocks is kind of that, but because I mean, rocks, they're cool.
Lucky brain, no climbing rock good.
There is that, but there's also, you know, there's all kinds of other stuff you can do to play tricks on people's minds to make them more likely to buy something irrationally. Beyond that, and I think there is some blame to be put on the advertiser if they intentionally deceive those that they're advertising to.
Yeah. So say we had a Toyota or whoever the advertising agency is for Toyota, a representative who was in charge of the whole project also there with us that day, and you'd ask them, and let's assume in this hypothetical they're being honest, why did you make this commercial this way? And let's just say for the sake of argument that it was just the truck climbing some rocks. And they were like, because it just looks cool.
Yeah.
And that's why they made it that way, because it looks cool. And Toyota thought it looked cool, and that's what Toyota wanted. So we just made it and it looked cool.
I feel like there's no problem with that.
Yep. I agree, actually.
And if you bought a truck because you liked the picture of it climbing some rocks or whatever, then that's on you. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if I go into it knowing that it's like, well, I know I'm not going to go climb rocks.
Yeah, you're going to drive it on the pavement.
It's going to be a pavement princess. Yeah, yes. It's not a big deal. But when I'm driving around on that pavement, I can do so with like...
I mean, what is pavement but a big flat rock if you think about it? I'm climbing rocks.
Many rocks glued together with dinosaur bones. But anyway. Yeah. And I think... I agree. I think that influence is weird because it has to be kind of about intentions. You know, obviously Toyota wants me to buy the car.
Right.
But I think, and I think there are plenty of people that would say that, well, it's obviously Toyota's fault. They know the power that they have because they have millions of dollars to run all these commercials and crap. And it's like, okay. But if you change the landscape to you have a band and you want to sell me an album, well, what are one of the first things you're going to do to try to sell me an album? You're going to get some pretty lit looking album cover art.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That says nothing about usually.
You cannot look at a picture and know how it's going to sound, unless there's one exception. If the band's logo looks like a thorn bush,
that's metal music for sure.
And it's going to sound like trash.
Oof.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm calling you out, like every one of thousands of bands that has the thorn looking. There's a derogatory name I've heard for that kind of logo that I forgot.
I've heard it called the barbed wire tattoo font.
There we go.
That's what I've heard.
Fair enough. Yes. Yeah.
Barbed wire.
You're not creative, and your music's probably bad.
Got a lot of haters now. Thanks, David. It's okay. They're just gonna go listen to their metal music and be sad about it.
It's fine.
Yeah. Is that wrong? You know, and no. I think most people be like, well, no, I mean, you should know that the album artwork says nothing about how the music's going to sound.
Right, because the product is a sound, and the thing they're showing you is not a sound.
What if they just put the WAV files, and we make our album artwork out of the WAV files? That would be funny.
Yes. Even though that really doesn't tell you a whole lot either, because, I mean, you can get some information from that, but not a whole lot.
It's just solid walls. It's like, yep, this is a metal track.
Yeah, this is metal track. Yep.
Oh, look, a slow song's on here.
There's one slow song.
Oh, man. Yeah. So I also feel like, I agree. Influence just happens. It is a thing that do. And sometimes if your intentions are to influence people to do something, I think that's not... it's not unrealistic to expect that people might have something to say about your intentions, you know.
Well, obviously your intention is to sell the thing, right? There's no mystery about that.
Sometimes, I mean, I wear really cool shirts, but I'm not trying to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
But I might inadvertently sell them for the company that made them because it's a walking advertisement.
Right.
You know? So if my intention, like, for example, if I'm wearing a really lit shirt and I tell you, yeah, they sent it to me for free as long as I wear it to this event where there's cameras. Oh, I'm a walking billboard and I'm intending to be the walking billboard.
Although, then it comes down to, okay, now if you're wearing this shirt for purposes of advertising it for this company, if I look at the shirt and I decide, wow, that's a cool shirt and I want one. Like, I guess the thing, one thing that's particularly different about that is that I'm there in the flesh with the shirt and I see exactly what I'm going to get if I buy one.
Yeah, but you may not know the quality of the shirt.
True. Right.
Like, how long is it going to hold up, you know?
Right. But do I really know that about basically any shirt that I buy? Like,
no, probably not.
If I just go to the clothing store and buy a shirt, like, I really don't have a great way to like, I can kind of guess based on how it feels.
The fabric,
but that's just an intuition. It's not real rigorous.
But the point is that am I acting as an agent of influence? Like, say, for example, you bought a shirt that ended up not being very comfortable. Like, I looked like I was having a good time in the shirt. And you bought it and he's like, God, this thing is really itchy and scratchy. And I'm like, yeah. And you like try mine on and you're like, oh, this is just how the shirt is. You never let on that it was like that. But I knew I was out there to sell shirts. Even if I'm not making commission, I got the shirt for free. That was my payment. You know, am I somewhat responsible for you buying a lemon shirt?
Maybe a teeny tiny bit, but.
Yeah, but a little bit maybe.
A little bit though.
Yeah. But that's very different than, hey, I just bought it because I thought it was cool and I'm wearing it because I want to look cool. And then you happen to buy it and you're like, hey, I can't believe that I bought this shirt because it looked cool on you, but it's really itchy. I'm like, I didn't want you to buy the shirt. Like, I had no intentions of you buying a shirt.
I just wanted to look cool because it looks cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Then I am in no way responsible. And that difference, I think, is important, especially for what we're talking about today, which is when you commodify that influence. So thanks to the advent of the internet, and I think we kind of hit on, well, one more brief aside. This is also important because I'm physically there to sell you the shirt. That's why I'm being called into question at all. Because for a long time, you know, on the street advertisement was not a big business. It was some people did it, but it was in the form of like selling the wrap space of your car. Like, hey, if you'll wrap your car in our company logo and just drive it around like a billboard, we'll pay you, right? So you know you're getting into that, you know. That wasn't very widespread. I've even heard, apparently, that people used to sell tattoo space. Like,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, apparently this was a thing, that if you wanted to get a tattoo of a business, of logo or whatever, like, say I think the Jack Daniels logo looks pretty spiffy, right? You could actually call Jack Daniels and say, hey, I'd love to get a tattoo of your logo, will you pay for it? And they would probably do it, because to them they're like, yeah, you're just a walking, if you look like a hard mf'er that's wearing my tattoo, then yeah, that's portraying the image we want. But if you're a little weenie, then no, you know, we're not paying for it, you know. But like, that's a thing that apparently it happens in some places. It's, you don't get very much, but it's a thing that happens. But nowadays, with the advent of the internet, you could be anywhere, everywhere, all at once, and be a walking billboard for advertising. And advertising agencies know just how much, like, they've quantified influence to the impression. Have you heard that term before?
Yes.
So what is an impression?
Somebody sees you, basically.
Literally, yes. Eyeballs have crossed your logo or something about you. A single instance of that event, that is the absolute unit of influence to advertising agencies, and that's what they sell, is impressions.
Right.
Yes, I will get this many instances of eyeballs on your logo. That is my KPI, a key performance indicator, for those who don't know what that is. And that's what they sell companies. And companies say, okay, how much would it cost to get us 10,000 impressions of our logo within this key demographic? And they can cut them up that way, you know? But one of the easiest ways to do that now is to farm that out to someone who just happens to draw that many eyes regularly. Used to be television stations and radio stations, because there was just only so many channels. There were only so many radio stations per geographic area that all had regular kind of captive audiences, you know? So it was kind of centralized in that way. But now, with the advent of the internet, it's very decentralized. People don't necessarily get on the internet and watch programmed television anymore, you know, through a stream. They watch another person. And so, naturally, it flows to them. And what I'm getting at with the commodification of this influence is that the value of an impression, or the value of the ability to get an impression, it no longer necessarily matters how you're getting it or quality-wise. The supply of the ability to give impressions is at an all-time low. Or sorry, the supply is at an all-time high.
Yes.
And the demand is at an all-time low, I guess. Well, maybe not. That's probably not accurate to say. If anything, the demand's gone up, because now you're having to fight everyone else wanting to put their crap in front of everyone else's eyeballs, you know? And so you end up with weird scenarios like teenage children being aware of this concept and becoming career influencers. Like, this is a job title that exists now.
Right.
We used to just call it advertising, but there's a special name for the person who just gets the eyeballs on them individually, or the things that they're immediately next to. And that is what an influencer is. And that's kind of weird that that's a thing. And honestly, I don't know how I would feel if I met somebody who was one. You know what I mean?
I have a pretty good idea of how I feel. About
how would you feel? Like, say I introduce you to a cousin and I'm like, yeah, this is my cousin, you know, John Influencer. And he is an influencer. That's what he does for a living. Mm-hmm. Companies pay him tens of thousands of dollars a year, or hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, to just spout things for them. Or wear their stuff or whatever. And like, you look at, what would your thoughts be? How would you feel about that situation?
Okay, I guess, okay, initial impression is, that's kind of sus.
What's sus about it to you?
Well, your personality's for sale, basically.
Is it?
I mean, yeah, I think so, in a roundabout way.
What is a personality? Because what if John just already had a pleasant demeanor, and that's why people wanted him to wear their shirt, because they want to see their shirt being worn by pleasant demeanor John Influencer, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Well, your opinions are for sale anyway. I guess maybe that's the more important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then my first question is going to be, okay, how did you ever become well-known enough to do this in the first place?
It's a good question.
Right, because you have to start somewhere. You have to give someone a reason to look at you for the first time before anyone will just pay you.
What's the best and worst answers that could be given to that question, you feel like? Because there's obviously a spectrum there. I can think of maybe the best answer.
Okay.
And this is the one that a lot of people who are influencers will probably give, whether it's true or not, which is, well, you know, I was making YouTube videos, Twitter posts, whatever, about just things that I liked. I was just making videos about ping pong tables, right, and ping pong. And I really liked ping pong, and I loved having a job where I could just play ping pong and make videos about ping pong. And it just so happens that I got started. The first person who paid me was a ping pong paddle company, and I happen to really like these ping pong paddles. There's a lot of P plosives in this,
yes,
hypothetical, and I'm very aware of it at the moment. And so they sent me some free paddles, and I just played with them and did videos of me doing that. And then later on, they wanted to offer a discount to my viewers, and I would get a portion of that, and it just went up from there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept doing ping pong, and like, that is still his main thing, is that he just does ping pong content all day, and apparently that's a very targeted user or niche consumer group that,
interesting,
people will pay him for. I imagine that's probably the best answer that could be given, is that the fact that they are an influencer is just incidental to the other thing that they wanted to do.
Right.
And I think that even you and me would agree that having what it means to have integrity, because that's what I think what we're really also talking about, mm-hmm, here, about your opinions being for sale, you know, if he were to say that, yeah, so I exclusively talk good about these things because they pay me, that's low integrity. Yes. But if my cousin John Ping, he's John Ping Pong now. John Influencer, the ping pong player, happens to actually believe and has always held the belief that certain brand of ping pong paddles are the best, he can just brag about them and get paid to do it because he would have bragged anyway. And I think that's ultimately maybe the best outcome is I would still do this even if I wasn't getting paid, but I'm not going to say no to money because their money's green, ain't it? You know?
Mm-hmm. This episode's not sponsored by Toyota, by the way.
Or, yeah, that's true. I should have name dropped it. I should have name dropped a dead company. Is Datsun still making cars?
Well, but I mean, I would accept a free Hilux, though. Just saying.
Unironically, Toyota, if you send us a pair of Hiluxes, we will actually sell out and talk nothing good about them in the most legitimate way. Because I do actually hold the belief that the Toyota Hilux is a preem vehicle. I'd love to get my hands and test one out and prove that here to our listeners, Toyota, if you're listening.
If you're listening, please.
Please send me a Hilux. Anyway. So that's the good answer, right? Probably. Is there a better way that could have probably gone, you think?
I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah. For me, that would be about as good as it can get. Like, I'd still maybe a little suspect because it's like, but you're on the take now.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at risk for your opinions being influenced by money, maybe even subconsciously, because
It's your job now.
Your livelihood relies on you maintaining these positive opinions. So if that brand happens to go into the crapper,
everybody has a price. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's the worst answer someone could give?
I don't know. I could get pretty creative about that, but
I'm fine with it. We've got time. I just think it'd be entertaining.
The worst answer someone could possibly give as to how they became an influencer. I mean, why did... Why do people know who the Kardashians are?
True, brother.
That's probably the worst answer.
Yeah, that is probably the worst answer. The most latest generation of being famous for being famous.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do outrageous things to get repeat reactions out of people so that people will give me money to keep being outrageous. And my personality is literally for sale.
Mm-hmm.
I will be whatever they want me to be. My opinions are totally for sale. Yeah, that's probably the worst. And I think, you know, that's why maybe opinions about influencers do differ, because let's take a step back just briefly.
Mm-hmm.
There is a profession that is very similar to this profession that has existed for a very long time that people have also had interesting opinions about. The modeling industry.
Hmm.
What's a model's job? And I'm not telling you what they're modeling, but what is their job?
They exist.
And they have a more specific purpose.
That's true. To display products.
Yes. To look good in, on, around, or near products.
Yes.
Because a lot of people, when you say model, might think of like, oh, well, like most of our interactions with models are the pictures of them in like stores, right? Mm-hmm. You go into a clothing store, well, there's got to be people... pictures of people wearing the clothes that you presumably are going to buy. And obviously the company selling those clothes wants you to buy the clothes, and you're more likely to do that if the person wearing them looks good in them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how much
they look, because I might look good too if I buy this whatever.
Mm. Yeah, if I buy this six pack of Tidy Whiteys, I better look like Mr. Calvin Klein himself. Bulge and all, I better look stunning in these Tidy Whiteys. Not like Walter White from Breaking Bad. Or, you know, no more colorful analogies. Yeah. Yeah. So that's like the original. But there's other examples of that. Like, this is a wild one that I never heard of until like midway through my life. I remember traveling to DC once when I was a kid for a school trip. And we went to this restaurant that had just opened, and half the people in there, we were there forever because we were like, I forget how it worked out. There was like different groups of us, and so some of us just had to wait. We were there for like 4 hours at this restaurant. Yeah. And I noticed that like half the people in that restaurant, it just stayed there. the entire time, and they weren't eating very much. And I asked my dad about it, and he was like, oh, they're probably just paid to be here. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, it's a new restaurant. They paid to keep people in the restaurant that are just actors or models, essentially.
And to make people think that the restaurant's busy.
Yeah, because busy restaurant means it's probably good.
Yeah.
Right? And that I was just blown away, you know, to know that that was a thing, that businesses will pay people to pose as customers so that actual customers will look in and see that it's a vibrant business and go there, you know. That's essentially, they're being paid like a model. You're being there to look like what a customer would look like to attract other customers, mm-hmm. you know. So that's fascinating. Yes. And I don't know, like, on the one hand, I mean, if people are paying me just to be somewhere, it's kind of a good gig.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, I'd love to pay to be paid to exist. I mean,
the only easier job is like being paid to stay home, right?
Yes, we need to start an anti-modeling agency where it's will send these people into your business if you do not pay me to make them stay home. It's called racketeering, by the way.
Yes.
Still very interesting business model. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Like, on the one hand, I'm kind of like, I mean, it's a little weird. You're not really contributing to society, maybe. That's some other people's complaints about jobs like that, where it's like,
you could argue.
You could argue
they're contributing to society. I mean,
somebody's paying them. The economy keeps chugging along.
Right. If someone's paying them, then presumably it was worth it to pay them, and it was good for them. And those people running the restaurant, they're doing good for society, we decided.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as the food's good, I guess.
Yeah. So what happens when, like, anyone could be this, because we need people to just be everywhere to promote anything that exists? And, like, how would you feel if you had a cousin, John, not yet influencer, that told you that they wanted to be an influencer, you know?
Harsh judgments.
Why?
And trying to talk them out of it.
Why? What's so bad about wanting to be an influencer? Like, what's so bad about...
First of all, I feel like that's not a very stable job to have.
Maybe not.
Like, I feel like it's not even intelligent to go into such a thing intentionally. Like, just to set out from the beginning to become an influencer. Like, it's different if you're, again, like, our ideal example of John Ping Pong, who wanted to... who got offered to become an influencer by... the company who sold his favorite products anyway, right? That's different, because mm-hmm. he was already going to be doing that. But if you're just like, if you're like in your junior year of high school and you're like, I think I'm going to be an influencer when I get out of here. And it's like, wow, really? That? Because yeah, you're at the mercy of, you're not only at the mercy of whoever is paying you to wear stuff or use stuff or display it, you know, to basically sell your opinions, but you're also at the whim of, does the, like, this seems like a fleeting market. Mm-hmm. Or, well, maybe not a fleeting market. The market's probably here to stay, but you're replaceable. You're so replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
Because any other schmuck who's thinking the same thing coming out of high school can also just be your competition. Like, the barrier to entry is basically zero.
Right.
So it just seems like not even a smart thing to do. So that's the first thing. But then also, yes, the whole thing about, okay, integrity, right? I'm just going to decide that my job is going to be to essentially lie to people about the choices that I make, in order to sell products.
Yep. One last question. Now, what if instead of using the word influencer, they said, I really want to go into sales?
Also harsh judgment.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It really is the same thing, because everything that you described about the influencer job is literally sales.
Mm-hmm.
You can make the argument that it's different, but I really do not think
it's a little bit different in some of the details, but
is it though? What's the end goal? They're both trying to achieve the same goal. One just gets paid commission. The other gets paid a lump sum, you know? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And if anything, being an influencer is smarter than being in sales, because it doesn't actually matter if anyone buys the crap.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to convince an army of people to buy the thing.
That's true.
You just need to convince the business that that will happen if they happen to shower you with free stuff and $10,000 cash.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you. I think it's a very shaky market. I think that it's one of those things that is over. It is and probably always will be a flooded market where what separate, especially now that it's being more and more commodified, I think businesses are starting to realize that, oh, it doesn't matter who I pay to influence for this. Much in the same way that it kind of doesn't matter who own, like if there are two billboards at the same place, like one stacked on top of the other, but they're owned by different people, it actually probably doesn't matter which person you get the billboard from. Because it's going to be there. It's going to appeal to the same people, you know. And if anything, it's riskier because anyone could just be a loose cannon and you're saddling your business's reputation with whoever you pay to put in. And it's kind of odd because I think, well, the most effective marketing is honesty. An honest endorsement is an authenticity in marketing is, it's this weirdly unattainable goal where, just like you had said, you know, if I told you about John Ping Pong, if he would have just talked to you about his love of ping pong, you know, and you were maybe interested in ping pong and he gave you some pointers on things to buy and he has the credentials or whatever, you would have just maybe bought the ping pong paddle he wanted you to, he's pushing, right?
Yeah, probably.
But the moment you find out, oh, he's hawking this stuff for me, for them.
Sus.
Instantly sus. It actually works against the intended purpose, mm-hmm. you know, because now it's, his authenticity is called into question.
Right.
You know, and so to call yourself an influencer, it's kind of self-defeating to being an influencer almost.
Yes.
Once you're aware that someone is that, now everything that they do is in question, at least for me. And I think for you.
Yes.
And should be for everybody, I think. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. I think that it's kind of foolish. It reminds me of like the modern, it's like the modern day version of, well, it's what people mean when they say, I want to be a YouTuber. Really, these days is kind of what it means. Although I would even argue that wanting to be a YouTuber is better because at least you're, what you're really saying is I want to get paid to do things that I like and get and film
right,
doing it.
Well, you're making something though. You're right. You're making videos. And presumably these are videos that, yeah, presumably these are videos that you want to make and people want to watch anyway.
Right.
And that there's not some ulterior motive of selling something.
Right. But I guess the vibe I get now when people say they want to be an influencer is kind of like someone telling me they want to be a model or telling me that they want to be a, you know, an actor or whatever, you know, I want to be in the pictures, you know, like, okay, great. That's a very unrealistic goal to have.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fleeting and it can go wrong very easily, you know. I also wonder, you know, the susceptibility, though, of influence. Like, I think the modern day influencer is effective right now because it's new. It's mm-hmm. not something, and it takes advantage of things like parasocial relationships that are
yes.
also an issue, which is, you know, what's a parasocial relationship?
A parasocial relationship is a one-sided relationship in which someone like an influencer, well, okay, I guess the important thing is the audience, members of the audience feel like they have a personal relationship with this central figure, mm-hmm. but they don't. Right. Of course, the influencer has no idea who they are.
Right.
And so, you know, you end up with cases where, well, like the members of the audience feel like this person is their friend, right? Like if I saw this person in the street, they would be my friend and we would do stuff together. Right. But and the only reason we don't is because they live far away and I'm not going to move out there. Right. But no, they don't know who you are and they only care about your money. Like,
right.
That's a parasocial relationship.
Yeah. But because you're isolated from the rest of the audience, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true. It also feels more personal because you don't see the thousands of other people who are also watching and feeling the same way.
Right. At best, you see a little icon that tells you how many other people are in the
audience.
But
that's just a number. Like, yeah. It's just an abstract thought in your head.
Yeah, it's very different than being in a crowd in a crowded auditorium.
Imagine if you imagine the situation different, where they're up on a stage doing the same thing, and you are in a stadium full of people, that many people.
Yeah,
it's different.
It's very different. You're very aware of the dynamic difference. Whereas, especially with modern day influencers, where a lot of them, I think you were the one who was telling me about this. Those who watch YouTube may have noticed that some of your YouTube content creators carry their microphones around. Like they use lapels, but they hold them instead of clip them on and they don't hide the wire.
It's stupid.
It is, but part of the reason apparently that happens is because they're trying to appeal that, like, yeah, I'm just a dude in my basement holding a...
Right. There's the aesthetic, the classic YouTuber aesthetic of low budget production.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it makes it seem more authentic and real.
Right.
And sometimes,
even if they're spending just as much as a big budget production, right? But they're putting on the facade of being just a guy. Yeah.
Right. But because they're in that setting, their basement or whatever, they're in their home. They're not on a set. You know what I mean?
But of course, it might actually be a set.
That's a good point. I remember...
Look at things like Linus Tech Tips.
Yeah. Yep.
Who literally builds sets to look like a home.
Yeah. I remember watching their channel when they... Because they did start out in a house. Well, they started out recording in their own homes.
I feel like most YouTube folks start out in a house because that's the cheapest set is the one I live in.
No, I mean, yeah, that's how they started. But then they literally bought a house.
Oh, I see.
That was the studio. No one lived there.
Right.
They would drive from their house to another house in a residential neighborhood.
A real house whose purpose is to be a set. Yeah.
Yep. And then they moved into a big studio building and then needed to recreate all the acoustics of a house. And the look of a house, but be able to fit all this other camera equipment stuff in. They had to, yeah. And I remember him talking about just how much more expensive it was to make something that looks like a house.
To build half a house.
Yeah, it is so much more expensive to build half a house than it is to build a whole house. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is wild.
Almost like houses are meant to go together.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's very easy to look at someone like that and be like, yeah, this dude's just chilling in his bedroom just like me. And he's just talking to me right now. And I can maybe even talk to them if I throw some money their way.
Yes.
It's kind of weird. You know, you and I aren't slinging dollars back and forth to have this conversation. But, you know, some people, it's hard to tell the difference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And because this is new, it's really easy for people like that to take the word of that person like a friend. Like me telling you should buy a Toyota is very different than a Toyota salesperson knocking on your door.
You should buy a Toyota. Yeah.
Yeah. Very different. Like with me, you would, I hope, at least go, okay, why is Joe? I wouldn't even think you would.
I would not meet it with immediate suspicion. No.
Yeah. Like
I would probably still ask you what, okay, why are you suggesting this to me right now? But I assume this would probably come up more organically. Like, Joe, I'm thinking about buying a truck, right?
Mm. Gotta get a Toyota, man. I've been checking out the new ones lately. That's totally different than if like we're sitting in a bar and like a guy wheels his chair around, is like, hey, you're thinking about getting a Toyota, and he comes up and you see he's got like the Toyota dealership badge.
Right, he's wearing a shirt with Toyota written on it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. Like, yeah.
You're on the clock. Like
he is now. Yeah. He wasn't until 5 seconds ago. Yeah. But I really hope that we get to a point where we start seeing that much in the same way that we look at, you know, fast food commercials now. Which we still have fast food commercials.
Mm-hmm.
So they clearly still work, or at least they pay for themselves.
Or they're stupidly hemorrhaging money on advertisements and they're not working.
Right. But you would hope the hand of the market would eventually weed them out.
Right.
So I hope that it gets to that point where we as a society are just more aware of this kind of thing and be like, okay, just because you see this doesn't mean that it's real, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
As much as it is weird feeling like you have to say that, I think that it does have to be said, you know? And I also feel like it's weirdly toxic for both people, because the person who's being the influencer, I think they're selling their opinions for too cheap. Like, it's one thing if someone walked up to me and handed me $1 million and was like, you just need to say you never need to say a bad thing about mundane item in your life again. Like, you better not talk smack about Doritos. I'd be like, you got a deal. Give me $1 million. Yeah. Easy.
Even if I hate Doritos.
Yeah, I don't have to say you're paying
also
me.
Not sponsored by Doritos, but Doritos are awesome. But
yeah, Doritos. If you,
John Frito-Lay, if you would, if you would like to send me $1 million to never talk bad about Doritos, you have a deal.
I'll take it. Yeah. But if someone says, "Hey, I'll pay you, you know, $2,000 a month," which, I mean, it's not the most money, but it's a change in your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And all you got to do is talk good about this product that you happen to like, and then the product starts going downhill, or all of a sudden now they're saying like, "Hey."
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's the risk to your integrity is if,
well,
you may like it now, but what if it changes? Yeah.
Well, not just that, but, and this is not the subject of today's episode, but it probably needs to be an episode. But what if the company's politics don't align with yours? Hey, we noticed that you're a huge gamer, and that's great and all, but you've had some things that you've said in a live stream that were not the most correct. And if you like getting paid to wear our Dorito shirts while you play video games all day, you might not say things like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or we may not be able to pay you anymore. And now you're having to start to judge, like, is it worth being able to say whatever I want to say? And then the consequences of that be what they are, right? Like, you would suffer those regardless. But now it, you know, people having their opinions about what you, your opinions are just opinions. Who cares? But now your livelihood from the company is one thing. But also, what if your audience doesn't like it or the company's opinion and stop watching you, thus devaluing you to the company? You know, all of a sudden you just have to care so much about what people think about what you think, and maybe pre-process and sanitize everything that you say and you do when the camera's pointed at you. That is mind-breaking, I feel like, to have to constantly be that aware of what you say and what you think. It can't be good.
No.
And then that's not to say that you shouldn't think about what you say or you shouldn't think about your beliefs, but crying out loud, you should think about them and think about what you say for your own benefit, not because you're worried necessarily about
it. Yeah, not because you're on the clock 24/7. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, goodness gracious. No wonder people that do that for a living, some of them have like severe issues because of it. Like, and I also feel like you train yourself to be just very like sensitive to other people's opinions and feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be. And I don't know. Like, my opinion about that is it makes you a weaker person, because now it's not just that your opinions and your beliefs are for sale. It's that they're up for grabs almost, you know. I think all in all, we shouldn't encourage people to do that for a living.
No.
And I think anybody who does encourage it probably is being dishonest. I would like to say that it would be good to see people who kind of launched into that the first wave of people who chose this as a lifestyle. It's getting to that point where I would expect to see some people talking about it as a job, having done it long enough now to be like, okay, so I was an influencer for 10 years. Here's the reality about what goes on behind the scenes. And this is either why I'm doing it or why I'm not going to do it anymore, or what needs to change about it. I'm looking forward to seeing people talk about that. And it just kind of sucks that things like that have to like spiral out so long before we figure out maybe that's not the best idea.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I don't know that I have too much to say, much else to say.
Dear listener.
Yeah.
When was the last time you bought something because an influencer told you to?
Are you sure?
That's the next. Do you know if an influencer has convinced you to buy something before?
Yeah. That turns very quickly into the very similar conversation that we had when we talked about Max Stirner and egoism.
Mm.
You want to give a brief synopsis of that episode we did?
Well, about egoism?
Yeah, we did an episode about it.
We did. What about it?
Oh, the spooks. And like, how do you know that this idea was your idea?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
It's very similar.
Okay, yeah. Got it. Yes. I understand.
Yeah. How do you know? Like, egoists should be like
they're paranoid about thinking for themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, but they should be diametrically like opposed to influencers. Like,
right.
Influencers are living embodiments of spooks for them. Right. You know? And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, you should totally check out our episode about egoism.
Yes.
We actually talk about philosophy in that episode.
It's true.
Which is pretty good. You should probably do that more often, but eh.
But yeah, spooks are just like a stand-in for like the feelings put on you by culture, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The things that culture tells you are important, right? But they're really only important because we said so.
Yep.
Those are spooks.
Yeah. And you should prioritize what you think over what we think.
Right.
It's like extreme individualism. Pretty cool stuff, actually. Yes. Yeah. I would say it'd be great to live in a world where influencers were not a job, not because because no one would want to pay anyone to do it, because it wouldn't matter. I don't know exactly what that world would look like. It might actually be horrible and awful, but I do look forward to maybe a day where nobody's an influencer, because why would you pay someone to influence for you, because no one's buying their crap anyway, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really care if 12-year-old's dreams are destroyed over that and they have to get a real job, but
well, yeah,
whatever. Learn to code, I guess.
I mean, well, there was also the wave of people who wanted to play video games online for, you know, when the first wave of people who got to get paid to play video games online came around. It's the same thing.
It is. Yeah. That's kind of no longer. Well, it's still a thing. Just
no, it's definitely a thing.
Yeah.
But the market is totally saturated, right?
Yeah. Well, and the barrier to entry is so low. Same way with influencing, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing. Barrier to entry is basically zero. So it's you against all the other zeros who are trying their best.
And I guess one good casualty that comes out of this, perhaps, is the death of the celebrity a little bit in the conventional sense.
Mm.
Because, you know, if you're Frito-Lay and you want to really sell some Doritos, used to, you had to go pay a Kardashian or a NFL football player or whatever to eat Doritos so that all the people that watch them also want to eat Doritos. But now it's like, I could do that. I could pay this one person millions of dollars.
Or pay thousands of people
hundreds of dollars.
Right.
And they'll just do it too. And I reach the same number of impressions. Yeah.
And probably across wider demographics.
Yep. Well, wider demographics, but more targeted within the demographic.
That's, yeah. Right.
Because the smaller the audience you have, it's kind of large audiences are kind of a double-edged sword. They appeal to much bigger demographics, which means you can spread your reach wider, but any impression you get for an audience that's not yours is a wasted impression, you know?
Right.
Like if you're trying to sell, feminine hygiene products, any impression you get on anyone who doesn't use or need feminine hygiene products
is wasted.
Pretty much wasted. Yeah. I won't say entirely wasted, but pretty much wasted. So that, I think, would be a good casualty to come out of, you know, the rise of the influencer and the death of the celebrity would be great. We'll always, I think, have celebrity because there is also just a weird appeal that people have about popularity. Like, pop music's a great example. I think pop music will always exist because a part of the enjoyment of pop music is the ubiquity. Like, I just know that when I go to a common area, I will hear it. Everyone's heard this song, so I'm a part of something bigger than me. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you've ever liked that niche cringe, you know, barbed wire tattoo logoed metal band, you know exactly how it feels to be the only person who's ever heard of that band.
Mm-hmm.
And how no one's going to listen to them. So that's not a great feeling. Well, it depends. Some people, I think, maybe think it's a great feeling.
Yes, like, we call them hipsters.
Yeah. Oh man. But I think it would be nice to see, you know, less emphasis being placed on the celebrity, because that's just like centralized influencing. And as much as I hate influencing, I hate centralization even more. Mm-hmm. So I'm fine to see decentralized influencing take over centralized influencing.
Fair enough.
And I think in the political space, decentralized influencing is probably a good thing.
But yeah, I think this is what we want in politics. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the idea that I don't have to essentially barter away my beliefs to come to a common ground with a big enough group of people. You still do because of the function of democracy, but at least in the advocacy space and when you're wanting to talk about, I can just go find people about my niche issue, and because of something like the internet, they can just focus on a niche issue mm-hmm. and pick up people that care about that particular issue. And those groups should be able to, you know, get bigger and smaller as the need arises, you know. Like, if, for example, your country is on the brink of a war or going to war over something, if there is an anti-war and a pro-war, you know, microcosm, those might swell during that to really help amplify those who have strong opinions about it. And then after we either go to war and it ends or we don't go to war, those can like calm down for the other issue to take over, as opposed to having, well, I'm anti-war, but I'm pro this other thing, and I really want my other thing, so I guess I'll sacrifice my belief about being anti-war temporarily at the ballot box mm-hmm. so that I can get my other thing, but I also get to go to war. And like, no, you can actually just kind of pick and choose based on the things that are important to you. And I think that's a good thing, mm-hmm. you know. Unfortunately, there's just not the same amount of money in politics. Fortunately, there's not the same amount of money in politics, so I don't think you'll see very many paid actors and influence to do that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they exist. I mean, Ben Shapiro has made a real pretty penny for himself being a mouthpiece, you know, as has a handful of other people that have been around a little bit, you know.
Sure.
Before him, it was like Glenn Beck. You had to actually be on radio, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Cool. Until next time, I guess. You have anything else you want to throw in?
I don't think so.
Philosophers.
Philosophers.
If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.